भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This evening we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, entitled The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 35. Is that right? 34. Yaya tu dharma karmartan. Yaya tu dharma karmartan. Yaya tu dharma karmartan. Dritya daryate Arjuna. Dritya daryate Arjuna. Dritya daryate Arjuna. Prasangena phalakankshi. Prasangena phalakankshi. Dritihi sa partha rajasi. Driti sa partha rajasi. Yaya tu dharma kamartan. Dritya daryate arjuna. Prasangena phalakankshi. Driti sa partha rajasi. Yaya tu dharma kamartan. Dritya daryate arjuna. Prasangena phalakankshi. Driti sa partha rajasi. Yaya tu dharma kamartan. Dritya daryate arjuna. Prasangena phalakankshi. Dhriti sa partha rajasi. Yaya, by which, tu, but, dharma, religiosity, kama, sense gratification, artan, and economic development, dritya, by determination, dharyate, one sustains, Arjuna, O Arjuna, prasangena, because of attachment, phala akankshi, desiring fruitive results, dhritihi, determination, sa, that, partha, O son of Pritha, rajasi, in the mode of passion. Translation. But that determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is the nature of passion, O Arjuna. Responsively, everyone please repeat. But that determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is of the nature of passion. O Arjuna. Purport. It's not one of the longer purports. One sentence. Any person who is always desirous of fruitive results in religious or economic activities, whose only desire is sense gratification, and whose mind, life, and senses are thus engaged, is in the mode of passion. So this chapter, entitled The Perfection of Renunciation, discusses various aspects of spiritual life in relationship to the three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature are goodness, passion, and ignorance. Mode means a particular influence or a set of parameters which, you know that word parameter? A set of rules which govern a particular situation. So that is a certain mode. So the material world has three general modes. There may be many sub-categories, but the three main categories of influence under which we find ourselves are sattvas, rajas, and tama guna, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And everything is influenced by a mixture of these modes of material nature. Nothing is beyond the modes of material nature. Therefore, in order for us to understand what is good and what is bad for us, it is important to understand how particular activities are situated within the modes of nature, because the result of being in the mode of goodness, urdvam gacchanti sattvasta, sattva, the mode of goodness, the result of being in the mode of goodness is urdvam. One rises up out of the material cloud. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that his goal is to go even beyond the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is the platform from which one can get beyond to the transcendental world, but the mode of goodness can also be binding. Therefore, Krishna says, Nistraigunyo Bhavarjun, be transcendental to all the modes of material nature. So, Urdvam Gacchanti Sattvasta Madhye Tishtanti Rajasaha. If one is in the mode of passion, Rajaguna, or if some activity is in the mode of passion, or if one is influenced by the mode of passion, then he remains in that mode. He remains, and the mode of passion is characterized by unlimited desires. Desire is the energy of the soul. We can desire anything. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tangstataiva vajami aham. Krishna basically says, whatever you desire, Arjuna, I will reciprocate with you. If you desire to come to me, then I will facilitate that desire. But if you desire to be independent of me, then I will also give you facility. I will give you the material world. I will give you even a philosophy by which you will be able to convince yourself that you are rightly situated. If that's what you want, if that's what you desire. So desire can elevate us. It can free us from our suffering. Or we can become entangled in unlimited desire. At the end of the second chapter, Lord Krishna makes a very nice example. He says, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravashanti yadvat. Just like so many rivers are entering into the ocean, similarly so many desires are coming into our mind. We have seen gold, and we've seen a watch, so we desire to have a golden watch. Whatever you can imagine, you can desire to have that and create that. In fact, that's one of the popular cliches, one of the popular sayings today, is whatever you can imagine, you can do it. You know, the psych gurus, the gurus of pop psychology, they encourage people, don't always be positive in your thinking. Attitude is everything. You see, they use that in advertising now. Attitude is everything. If you just have the right attitude, then your life will be perfect. Never mind the fact that your house was just bombed and your family was killed and this and that, and you know, so many things have gone wrong in your life, but just have the right attitude and everything will be okay. Anyway, so Krishna says that just like so many desires are coming, just like so many rivers are entering into the ocean, so many desires are coming into the mind, one after another, one after another. We get one desire, we try to fulfill it, and then we get another desire, and we try to fulfill that, and we get another desire. And this is compared to itching. Itching is never really satisfied. If you get an itch somewhere in your body, the more you scratch the itch, the more you're likely to create some infection and cause disturbance to yourself. So, tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashantim apnoti na kama kami. Now, you notice that so many rivers are entering into the ocean, but the ocean is always calm in the sense that if you would practically gather up all the water, let's say 24 hours a day, You know, just like you have a bathtub and you turn on the tap and so much water is coming into the tub and it fills up. And at a certain point, it overflows onto the bathroom floor, right? So one would think if you find all the rivers in the world and measure how much water is entering into the ocean, you would think that the ocean would rise up over past its shores. It would go beyond its shores. Well, for various reasons, it doesn't. Similarly, only the person who learns to control his desires, who learns to satisfy his desires in a regulated way, in a spiritual way, only such a person can be satisfied. Not he who is running around in the mode of passion, trying to satisfy each and every lusty desire that he gets. I've got to have a new car. I've got to have a bigger house. I've got to have more friends. I've got to have more power. It's endless. Duspraena analena cha. Material desires are always itching, always burning, and never satisfied. It's like a fire that can never be. You put more fuel on it, and more fuel on it, and more fuel on it. It doesn't, there's no end. It only gets bigger. So, the mode of passion is characterized by unlimited desires, and it makes life hellish. For a while, it may be exciting. And you see people, especially those who are successful, they get some kind of happiness out of chasing their desires. But those whose desires are not fulfilled, they only get frustration. There's a qualification there that if your desires are fulfilled, if you get that nice new car, if you get that nice house, if you get that position, you get that raise in pay, you meet that person that you wanted to meet, you enjoy sex life or whatever it is, then you get some little temporary, chapala sukh, it's called flickering happiness. You get something in the mode of passion. But ultimately, it won't satisfy you and you'll become frustrated. Sooner or later. And then frustration leads to anger, and anger, bewilderment, loss of intelligence, and so that's the mode of passion. Urdvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasa. Jaganya guna vrittista do gacchanti tamasaha. Someone who is in the mode of ignorance is characterized by laziness. Slothfulness means unclean, dirty, not very energetic in life, no real goal, just waiting for death. Often intoxicated, the mode of ignorance is characterized by intoxication. We don't need intoxication. Intoxication is for people who are frustrated. Life is full of joy. Without intoxication, life is full, especially spiritual life, when you really do have a positive attitude, a spiritually positive attitude, then life is very fresh. Each day, one can think that one is coming closer to Krishna's lotus feet. It's exciting. We don't need to take things that dull our senses. Alcohol, what does it do? Does in the heavenly planets, at least, they have soma, soma ras, and that expands your awareness. It It expands your power of sight and your power of hearing, and your consciousness expands. And there's no after effect. There's no side effect. Everything that we're experiencing, there's always some side effect that they don't tell you about. Intoxication, alcohol, it ruins your body. It destroys millions of brain cells. Every time you get drunk, people, it doesn't say on the bottle. Now they're forced to put on cigarette packages everywhere. It's funny, people don't stop smoking cigarettes, but it says everywhere. Cigarettes are injurious to health. The Surgeon General has determined that cigarettes will kill you. Cigarettes will destroy your baby. Cigarettes will do this. It's right out there, almost in the middle of the billboard. They're so, arrogant now because they know that people are addicted to smoking cigarettes, even though it's killing them. What to speak of alcohol? They don't put it, alcohol, you're not forced to put on the bottle. This bottle of beer will destroy so many of your brain cells. But it does. Alcohol destroys. This may ruin your liver if you drink more than two or three of these a day. And who drinks only two or three? You go out and, especially here. you can ruin your health. Who needs it? You can be peaceful and happy and joyful by a God-conscious life. So the mode of ignorance, we don't want any of these modes. But the mode of goodness is characterized by satisfaction to some degree. It is characterized by awakening of knowledge. So, everything in this 18th chapter is discussed in relationship to how it fits into the modes of material nature, where it stands. Now, here we're talking about determination. Yesterday we talked about determination in the mode of goodness, determination to practice austerity by which one can cut the knot. Chidjante, hridaya granthis, the grantha, the knot. One can cut the knot of attachment, and in the world, he can be a liberated soul. Karmana manasa gira nikilasvapi avastasu jivan mukta sa uchate. Even if your mind, your body, your words are fixed on the transcendental, if you're meditating on the transcendental world, which is substance, which is sat-chit-ananda, not this asat-achit-nirananda, not this temporary, ignorant world where there is so much suffering, dukkhalayam-ashasvatam, not this world, but that world where there is substance, real substance. It doesn't diminish. It doesn't deteriorate. It is above time. So if one can somehow or other arrange his life so that his mind is always fixed in that way, training, it requires training. It requires sadhana. It requires a little austerity. So that is determination in the mode of goodness. I'm determined to achieve that result by following this process. That is determination in the mode of goodness. Now here we have determination in the mode of passion, where one is intensely desirous of getting ahead in material life. He wants to work and he wants to enjoy the fruit. Fruitive results. Fruitive results means you get the fruit of your work, and then you covet that. Then you enjoy that. You don't offer it to Krishna, but you don't offer it to Krishna and then share it with others, but you hoard as much as you can get. You amass a big fortune. You try to become greater than anybody else. And you are prepared, persons in the mode of passion, who are mad after fruit of results. They have no compunction. They have no fear. In fact, their mode of working is to put other people down to get ahead in life. Charvaka was a great materialist, and he is sometimes quoted by the Puranas and by preachers. Charvaka's philosophy was beg, borrow, or steal, but somehow get wealth. Now, he said ghee, but ghee is a sign of material wealth, opulence, one who can afford ghee. That means he's keeping good cows, and one who has land and cows. This was an agrarian materialist. So, somehow or other, get ghee and enjoy life, because tomorrow you die and there's no meaning. Whatever you do, even if you steal or kill, there's no retribution. You don't have to pay any price. There's no God watching you. There's no reaction. There's nothing like karma. This was Charvaka's philosophy. So you're free. Why be moral if there's no benefit to it? Do whatever you can get away with. As long as you don't get caught, it's right. Do it. Cheat others, steal from others, get money, enjoy your life. That is the ethic of a materialistic man. So, fruitive results, and Prabhupada said in the purport, any person who is always desirous of fruitive results and whose only desire is sense gratification. So, here it talks about the purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. They are purusha, meaning a man or a human or whatever. These are the basic activities, categories of activities, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and then finally liberation. There's a natural evolution. In order to establish some meaning in one's life, one pursues dharma. You have to have some meaning for existence. Otherwise, there's no motivation, there's no energy, there's no strength to get up and undergo austerity unless you have some goal that you're trying to reach, some transcendental goal, some higher purpose than just imitating the animals. The animals just seemingly without any sense, without any purpose, they just eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But human beings have advanced intelligence, and they can't be satisfied with that. Their intelligence won't allow them. They'll feel disturbed. I'm just an animal. Unfortunately, our modern civilization has come to that level. People are basically doing only those things without much meaning, without much thought as to the purpose. If you do a survey, you find television and radio and media people going around doing surveys all the time about everything. They do surveys about people's sexual habits, about people's eating habits, about people's sleeping habits, about this and that. And people are writing all kinds of books about this amazing statistic and fact. But I really wish they'd do a survey on what people consider the ultimate goal in life. And some have done it, but it's very rare. And the results are usually not very surprising. Very few people. There was a survey done in 1984 by George Gallup Jr. Have you heard of the Gallup poll? They're pretty famous. Anyway, he's a pollster. Means that's his business, is to do surveys, and then that information is used by the government, it's used by business, it's used by various advertisers, etc. Anyway, he did a survey on whether or not people believed in God. And he found that about 90% of Americans, 90-95% of Americans, say that they believe in God, but their habits, although more and more people were saying they believed in God, but more and more people were engaged in lying, stealing, cheating, etc. So on the one side, they say they believe in God, but their moral life was getting worse and worse. But he found that about 10%, 12% actually, were very devout, and that they were simple, austere, dedicated to God. So a very small percentage of people are actually truly interested, have some dharma, some goal, higher purpose. The rest are just dvipad pashu. We're living, we're walking around, we're walking amongst people who are basically no better than cats and dogs. Sorry to say. They're all wonderful cats and dogs. I like cats and dogs. I was at my sister's place, and they had a nice little dog, and I was patting him, and he was a very friendly fellow. But he's a dog. Not much benefit in such a life. So, Artha, economic development, in order to sustain a culture of dharma, there needs to be some economy, right? We're figuring that out now. Most of our devotees are out creating some economy. Because without money or some type of wealth, it's hard to sustain yourself, it's hard to promote any value system that you may have, any teaching. We need economic development. When one achieves economic success, there is a tendency, bhogaisvaya prasaktanam taya paritta chetasam, there's a tendency to get distracted by sense gratification. Well, also we have to satisfy our senses, because we have senses and we can't just cut them off. But dharma viruddha bhuteshu. Here also it is said that whose only desire is for sense gratification. Only desire. But sense gratification is necessary, but it shouldn't be our only desire. Rather, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, right in the beginning, in the second chapter, there's a whole series of verses. Sutta Goswami is he's preaching to the sages at Naimisharanya. And these are all the most powerful ascetics. They're completely free from material attachment. They're living in the forest and cultivating austerity, and they've had the opportunity to meet Sutta Goswami. So they've questioned him. And right off, he says, Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hoksaje ahoitukiya pratyata yayatma supersedati. And we discussed this verse yesterday. Highest occupation, paro dharmo, the highest activity, for Pungsa, for a man, is to engage in devotional service to the Lord. That is our ultimate goal, to become a lover of God. We are part and parcel of God. There's no reason why we should be suffering in this material world. We have put ourselves here by our own choice, our own volition. We are meant to be with Krishna. Krishna is calling us. Come to me. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Come out of your darkness. Come to me. Surrender to me. I will protect you. Don't worry. Ma suchaha. I'll take away all your even karma, purva karma. I'll clean your slate. I'll clean your backlog of sinful activities. You won't have to suffer for them. Just take shelter in me. Surrender to me. Unfortunately, we're not so intelligent. We don't have so much faith. We're a little short on faith. But this is idealistically, we know this is our goal. This is our swarthagatim. Our self-interest. This is what will satisfy us. Nate vidu svardhagatim hi Vishnu. Prahlad Maharaj says that the greatest problem in the world, the greatest obstacle to happiness is that people don't know what their self-interest is. They don't know what will bring them happiness. Ahoitukiya pratyata. Now that, he's qualifying, devotional service should be without any business mentality, without any motive. People approach God, and that's good. It's always good to approach God in any condition. But the best way to approach God is in pure love, where we don't find pure love in this world. Love in this world is always, there's motive. We have some need, some desire, and we want our beloved to fulfill that need. And if that need is not fulfilled, then our relationship is often terminated or modified. The love goes out the window. People may stick together, but the real, that's only for convenience sake. The actual loving reciprocation is not there. That is motivated love. But love between the soul and the super soul is ahoituki. We have to try to purify ourselves of material ambitions in our relationship with God. And apratyata, of course, this is determination that nothing will stop me. We need that kind of perseverance that obstacles may come, but because I'm fixed in my understanding of Krishna, because I know that there's nothing more than this, therefore I will not change. Actually, when one is on the platform of mind, there's always a chance of changing. The mind is always jumping. But when one is on the platform of intelligence, one is fixed. Because knowledge is knowledge. If something is true, it is like light. Krishna Surya Sama. It is like light, sama. And darkness cannot stand in a place where there is light. And if you are fixed in knowledge, then ignorance cannot cheat you, cannot fool you. Something else that is disguised as knowledge will not disturb you because you're fixed in knowledge. So, yatma supersedati, he goes on to say, Sutta Goswami says, this will satisfy you. This is your svardhakithyam. And then He describes Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayatyashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yadahoitukam. He says that by performing this bhakti, one will get the requisite knowledge and detachment. It will come without special endeavor, it will come spontaneously, automatically. Of course, one should study. One should use his intelligence to study philosophy, to study the scriptures, to improve his knowledge. But the obstacle to knowledge is not the ability to know. The obstacle to knowledge is lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, bewilderment. These are the obstacles to knowledge. These are our enemies. The knower and the known have a natural relationship. There's not a problem there. If you endeavor to know Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself to you. The reason why you can't get to know Krishna is that you're blocked by lust and greed. By practicing Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam, by engaging your senses in Krishna's service, then Janayat Yashu Vairagyam, you will get Jnana and Vairagya. Quite naturally. So the process of devotional service is superior. And then he says, Dharma svanustita pungsang vishvaksena katasuya notpadi yad yadi ritim srama evi kevalam. Any activity which does not give you attraction, rati, notpadi yad yadi ritim, which does not give you attraction for Visvaksena Kata. Visvaksena means the master of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So any activity which does not give you that, it is srama or useless labor only. So we get some kind of idea what activities devotional service involve. They should give us an activity. They should give us an attraction. And then Sutta Goswami goes on to further qualify what relationship facility for sense gratification has. He says, Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartho ratai upakalpate. Nartasya dharma kantasya kamo labai hi smitaha. All activities, occupational activities, dharma, means our occupational activities, whatever we're engaged in devotional service. These are meant, we should know that this is not meant for making a permanent home in the material world. We're not here to stay. Nobody should make that mistake. We've got a short time, 50, 60 years, 70 years. It's a short time. You can't stay here longer. Death is going to capture every one of us. Time, I am the destroyer of worlds. Kalosmi Bharatarshava. Krishna is time. And time catches everyone. No one can escape the long arm of time. Everyone has to die. Jata shahi dhruva mrityur dhruvam janma mritasya cha. Everything that has a beginning has an end. This body has a beginning, it will have an end. 100% certain. So he says that our occupational activities are meant for spiritual life, for attaining spiritual life. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. Apavarga refers to the material world means pavarga. In the Sanskrit alphabet, the Vedas are all compiled in Sanskrit. It's the oldest language in the world and a very scientific language. So the alphabet is such that there are different categories of vowels and consonants. They're in different vargas. They're known as vargas. Sanskrit is a phonetic language. You learn it by hearing more than by study of it. Of course, a little study helps, but basically the best way to learn is by hearing, because it's phonetic. And there are, if you don't learn to discriminate the sounds, there are many sounds that sound very similar. So pa varga, each letter has a meaning. So there, the pa varga, the first word, obviously, the first consonant is pa. P-A, short pa. Pa, pa. The aspirated, the H in there, the extra air. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. So the pa means parishram. We're talking about the material world now. Apavarga means beyond pavarga. A indicates beyond. So what is pavarga? Parishram, it's hard labor. Parishram means hard labor. In this life, you work hard all your life, and what do you get? Old age, disease, and death. Ultimately, I mean, you can say, well, gosh, I had a great life, it was all worth it, but factually speaking, nobody is really ready to die. At the end, we always see that, what have I got to account for my life? What have I actually achieved after all this hard labor and frustration? Pa, pa. Pa means pena. The consonant pa comes from pena. And pena means foam. Foam at the mouth, like you see a horse. I don't know, you don't see so much here, but in New York you see, because in Central Park they have these carts that are horse carts. You've seen them, right? And these horses are worked very hard. You must see it here in the villages, huh? Horses that work hard. And when they work hard, they foam at the mouth. It's another aspect of material life, just like parishrama. Here we have foaming at the mouth. You work hard, you foam at the mouth. Ba means byartha, or what is the meaning of ba? I forget that one. And ba means bhaya, fear, and ma, mrityu, death. So, apavarga. So, Sutta Goswami is telling the sages at Namisharanya that dharmasya hi apavarga, so everything that you do should help you to get beyond this material world. Again, you don't belong here. Your nature is to be free, to be transcendental, to live free from anxiety, fear, to be free from misery and suffering. And then, kamasya, the next verse, kamasya nendriya prithir labo jiveta yavata jivasya tatta jigyasa nartho yascheha karma bi. And here the important thing is jivasya tatta jigyasa. Life's desires are meant to, again, we come back to this desire idea. You have to, your life's desires should be directed towards jigyasa, transcendental knowledge. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now, after passing through 8,400,000 species of life, now that you're a human being, hopefully, what qualifies you to be a human being? You're eating, the animals are eating. You're sleeping, the animals are sleeping. You're having sex, the animals are having sex. You're engaged in protection or whatever, and the animals have their own system. What qualifies you actually to be a human being? This qualification that you have a higher goal in life. You have a transcendental reason for being, which animals don't have. So one should try to live, and here this is in chapters in regard to renunciation, so one should use his senses, kamasya nindriya, it says, not for simply lusty activities. Kamasya, indriya means senses, and nindriya means not. Well, the senses should not be used just for lusty activities. Don't allow yourself to go wild. Be moderate in everything that you do. You have to engage your senses, no doubt. But there should be some moderation. Yukta hara viharasya, yukta chestasya karmasu, yukta svapna vabodasya, yogo bhavati dukaha. Let there be some sense control, some regulation, some simplicity, enough to keep body and soul together. But don't let it get out of control. And use your energy for this spiritual life, Krishna conscious life. There is one verse here which I came across also, which is very nice. I wanted to just end with this. It's the last verse in the fourth chapter. I don't know it, so I'm going to read it. Tasmada jnana sambhutam hritstam jnana sinatmana chitvainam shankshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Atishto tishta bharata. Stand and fight. Okay. Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So this is a very nice verse. We should cultivate knowledge about renunciation. Seeing things through the eyes of Shastra, Shastra Chakshush, we should guide our lives, taking an ounce of practicality and a pinch of common sense, and use the scriptures to be our guide. And the previous saintly persons and the Vaishnavas. And in that way, we can achieve both renunciation leading to perfection and satisfaction, even in this life. But we have to rise up at least to the mode of goodness, not the mode of passion or ignorance. So we'll stop there. Are there any questions? Comments? Do you think you're unique? Do you think that you are unique or different than all of us? Yeah, so do we. Practically speaking, our present civilization, we're all more or less born in the mode of passion and ignorance. So, therefore, it is recommended that we go through four stages of life: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa. And even the last stage can be avoided also if one is fixed up in vanaprastha. So in householder life, one is allowed regulated sense gratification. But again, you have to have the determination to stay above the water. Don't drown. Hidvatma patam griham andakupam. Householder life can be like a deep, dark well where you drown in the waters of sense gratification. You can get carried away if you are too, if you're not careful, like shaving. If you're not careful, you can cut your face. So, you can engage your passionate energy in many different ways. As a brahmachari, you can engage your passionate energy in being an enthusiastic book distributor, an enthusiastic sankirtan leader, an enthusiastic preacher. I attribute any little success that I may have experienced, and that's very little, but any little success that I have achieved in preaching, I attribute that more to my passion than my knowledge. Because I love to, you know, preach. I love to put on a show. I feel very strongly, I feel very passionately about what I'm talking about. And I feel very passionately that I want others to have an opportunity to know Srila Prabhupada. I cannot imitate or create what Srila Prabhupada can do for them. But I passionately want people to be exposed to Prabhupada's books, to be exposed to Prabhupada's mission, and to have an opportunity. So a brahmachari, there are many ways he can, or a brahmacharini for that matter, can dovetail their passion. And if at a certain stage one gets married, very good. Most of our acharyas were grihastas. But that should be done very carefully, not foolishly or blindly. And then one can do business. And if you're going to do business, then do that business for Krishna and be a very good businessman. Just to raise a couple of kids and eat a few meals, and there's nothing very glorious in that. So a householder, there are three ashrams that don't make any money. But if you're going to be a grihasta, then you should create some economy, economic development, so that we can expand, we can give free Bhagavad Gitas or distribute Bhagavad Gitas at subsidized cost, or we can put on big festivals. And just like one of the most wonderful festivals I've attended is Rath Yatra in New York City. So it's all paid for by the congregation. It's about $40,000. Just one festival, one day, Saturday, New York City, down Fifth Avenue, biggest city in the world. It's ecstatic. Three big carts driving by the Empire State Building. It's ecstatic. But the congregation, there's very few people in the temple who have any money. So the grihastas, they make money and they use it for Krishna service to do wonderful things. Not a difficult thing. Common sense, practical. Is that sufficient, or you had some other idea? Now you don't know me. Any other questions? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.